Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Sustainable Jack?
It's the last of the summer. Getting ready for school to start.
All right.
Really good 12 string guitars.
Baby, let your hair hang down. Everybody's talking about a new way of walking. Do you want to?
Yeah, you don't want to drive those fuel belching, smoke leaving cars. You can walk.
Baby, let your hair hang
Good morning, Sustainable Jack. It's a beautiful day out there. Of course, every day is a beautiful day.
Oh, yes.
The sun, our nearby star, warming our planet as it rotates, revolves around it.
Yes. Our orchestra's a little bit slow.
Oh, okay. All right. That was pretty fun last week. We went out and visited the giant solar array in Snow Camp.
Yes, it was.
White Cross. And, boy, that's, I've never seen anything quite like it. I've seen pictures, I guess, but that was great just being on the ground there, seeing endless rows of posts ready for solar.
Yeah, we could go back today, and who knows what we might find.
That's right. They were working fast. They said a module a minute. A module a minute per person. And faster than that, he said. It was.
He said his crew wouldn't be that slow.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely incredible, you know?
That's how the Egyptian pyramid was built, too. You know, they had to move, like, a 2 or 3 ton stone every minute to, because there's thousands of them on there.
Wow.
Cranes. They had cranes. Well, it's been a long time since we've been in the studio.
It's been a long time. It has. And it shows.
Oh, we were locked out before.
Oh, gosh. And then different ones of us were not here.
We're out of town and such.
Oh,
so,
man. It's just amazing.
I don't know how amazing it is. But that sounds like it's time for the news.
Yeah, the newsboy is a little bit late this morning.
You got any news?
I got some news. You got some news?
News about renewable energy.
Yeah. The American Wind Energy Association said that with the extension of the credits, 2012, the United States was the world's largest installer of wind turbines.
Wow.
Ahead of China. China still leads cumulatively with the most wind turbines, but right now the biggest market is still the U.S.
Wow, that's great.
It grew by 90%.
90%?
In 2012.
Wow.
Compared to 2011, it still had the tax credit. So the extension of the tax credit came 5 days after it had lapsed. And this year seems to be on track to easily match last year. But if they grow at another 90%, that's going to be incredible.
That is incredible.
Wind now makes up about 7% of our electrical energy generation.
Wow. And meanwhile, other sources of energy.
Like solar. Solar almost doubled again last year.
Mm-hmm.
Gone are the days of 60% growth. Present are 110% growth, which means
wow.
In 8 months, they've installed more solar than ever existed.
Wow.
Whoa!
Well, you can believe that, seeing that
this is incredible.
Set up down in White Cross.
That's right. Cellulosic ethanol is kind of taking it on the chin. It has not taken off as fast as they hoped. The technology has not advanced. Now, cellulosic ethanol is using primarily waste products as the cellulose input, such as old trees, mulches, dead wood,
straw,
switchgrass,
mm-hmm.
and the ever-loving algae. Still being researched, but it's just not, it's become a lot more difficult to get the oil out of algae than they initially determined.
They're tough little suckers, huh?
You know, the waste products from algae, ethanol production, are easily made into animal feeds, and so that's not an issue. And it can be done anywhere where you can get just a little bit of water. In fact, they're talking about doing it in the desert with saline waters because algae likes that type of thing.
Wow.
And a lot of invading algae that can be blown in through the air can't tolerate it. So there's still some really good hope for that. Currently, ethanol gives us more miles on our transportation than fracked oil. Which one's getting the most airplay? Well, of course, it's the fracked oil. Yes, and then there's a couple other things that are, you know, that are happening along those lines. The fastest motorcycle up Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
Did not make hardly a sound at all. It was just tire treads running by. It was not electric.
Yeah, I wonder how they...
Fastest motorcycle, bar none. The fastest motorcycle. And the fastest motorcycle in the world is the same motorcycle. It's the Motorcys guys who have dominated the Isle of Man running and, you know, other things like that. So, you know, we're really impressed with this. And they also hold the all-out record at the Bonneville Salt Flats. So electrics are incredibly fast. Our buddies at...
So that one at... contest for just electric bikes. That was just motorcycles.
Motorcycles.
All motorcycles.
Yeah, and an electric nominated.
Well, I mean, yeah, going uphill and yeah. high altitude.
Right.
You can see why.
And the FFR tracks, of course, have changed their names to
Outrider USA.
Yes, and they were in Colorado this year in mm-hmm. June and found out that they were not going to be running, and neither were any others, because they had upped the record by 50% to 32 miles per hour. The insurance would not cover the running of the electric bicycles and electric trikes up the mountain.
What?
And they just went, insurance. We're not going to let you run. Because, you know, at 20 miles an hour, you fall, you skin your knees. At 30 miles an hour, it's kind of scary. But you say you guys can go faster? You could launch yourself off the mountain, and that would be really terrible. So that's what's going on there. Oh, in the distance, we can hear a delivery of coal to the plant here at
Yes, that's right. At UNC,
Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
The deliveries of coal are down 33% nationwide.
Hmm.
It's just so easy for the power companies to shift over to the what used to be the backup power, the natural gas turbines.
Mm-hmm.
With some of the contracts they signed on natural gas were low enough they can replace those coal plants right off the bat. So and they have not been able to get financing for coal plants for like the last 10 years. The
mm-hmm.
banks just are looking at it going, 30 years from now, we know you guys are dirty, and we know that you followed off regulation, but we don't think you're going to be as successful in the future. So we can't make a loan because we're not sure we'll get money back.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've had to do, of course, is what Duke Energy did, and that is to put the cost forward and start charging people more money for a plant that's yet to be built.
Whole another meaning of pay it forward.
But it does help them because instead of, you know, the normal 10 years it takes to get a plant up, in which you're paying interest for something that's not generating income. And speaking about generating income, the you know, natural gas, you can make an order today. Use your credit card if you've got the source of natural gas and you've got the transformer yard close by. This module can be delivered in an international shipping container to you and set up, and within just a week or two, you'll be generating electricity. So you'll be making money before the first payment's due.
Wow.
And so that's another big, big plus, is the modularity of the natural gas electrical production process, which can be matched or even exceeded by a wind turbine. Mm-hmm. We had a gentleman here not too long ago, and he just stunned us, saying they could put up two or three turbines with one crane every day. And
Big ones.
And we were just stunned. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in the studio. It was just so outrageous that they're that fast. And, of course, they're that fast putting these solar arrays. We were at a solar farm last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope maybe we can go back today and see the big difference that time makes of 1 week.
You bring your hard hat?
I was hoping I could borrow one. But I did bring shoes and pants.
Oh, that's good. I'm so glad you wore your pants today.
That's right. Well, I did. You know, normally I'm in here in my shorts, and it's kind of embarrassing with all this glass here. But
we're in a fish
anyhow,
tank.
It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing.
And the wind turbines, when they generate electricity, they don't use a lot of water.
And neither does a solar panel.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to believe there are drought-stricken areas, given what we have currently in our conditions here, water-sogged land and areas of the country like Asheville that passed their yearly allotment for rain a month and a half ago.
Mm. Wow.
They're on track to probably have 3 feet more rain this year than they average.
Wow.
So it has been a wet, global weirding year. And there's still places, dry as a bone, out west, et cetera. It's just that I haven't heard if we've caught up, because we had, according to some of the people I interviewed on this show, biblical proportioned drought conditions in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely
amazing. Now the heat wave is on in China.
Oh.
So they're having record-breaking heat all across China.
Really?
Pretty spooky when the weather goes wonky.
When it goes wonky?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You just never know what might happen. Especially with our computer systems. They seem to be so slow. Oh! Who let them in?
It sounds like Godzilla there for a moment. Duke Energy shutting down that nuclear plant in Florida.
Yes, the Crystal River plant has been shut down after losing oodles of money. Probably $10 million a day is what is projected with a major nuclear power plant when it's not producing. So they like to run those things as often as they can. The songs, the Sano Free Nuclear Generating Station songs, sounds so nice after that, right? They were putting new turbines into it, and somehow they had some problems with the connections with the reactor. It was pitted and scarred more than they thought the pipes would be. And after a year and a half of losing money, they closed that sucker, and now it's a monument to stupidity on the beach there in Southern California between San Diego and Los Angeles.
What do you do with it now?
and just sits there. And then, of course, as we continue, nuclear, the gift that keeps giving, we have found out from Fukushima something incredible has happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's been leaking.
Been leaking the entire time into the ocean, thousands mm-hmm. of gallons.
Hello, you're on the Home Power Hour.
Hi, this is Ben Harris here in Burlington.
Oh, Ben, what you calling about from Burlington?
Well, as if you didn't know, we have our Burlington Mini Maker Fair, our second one, coming up this weekend, August 17th, this Saturday, here in Burlington.
Oh, congratulations. Cool. Mini, the Mini Maker.
Yes, it's a bunch of dwarfs. It's short people, all yeah. under 7 feet tall, who will be doing the...
We're in so much trouble.
I know. We are. But
Actually, believe it or not... we're all very tall. the mini thing is to throw people off.
Oh, I got you. The land of giants. Where's this going to happen, Ben?
It's at the Holly Hill Mall and Business Center, which is on Huffman Mill Road off exit 141 here in Burlington.
And it's right
and
where...
And we'll be...
It's right where 70 and Huffington meet, right?
Right. The corner of 70 and Huffman Mill, it's Church Street. It's also Church Street is 70.
Right.
And so with Dunham Sports and Sears and Discount Furniture World is there. So we'll be inside and outside of the mall. We'll have exhibits set up in the inside pedestrian space and a couple of the empty storefronts and also outside in the back. And we're even having a near space launch.
Oh, cool.
Hopefully, depending on the weather,
send a balloon.
Should be, that's a helium balloon. They're going to launch to the edge of space, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go up until the pressure gets to the point that the balloon bursts in. It activates the parachute. And they're pretty excited. They've launched, it's a group NC Near Space, and they've launched from Raleigh and other areas before, but they're excited to come further west because there's less chance they'll lose their rig out to sea if the winds are high aloft. So it'll be interesting, and they'll be tracking that. There'll be a signal on some ham radio channels from the balloon, so they'll be tracking that and getting telemetry from its GPS along its path and then bringing back some pictures. They'll be able to get pictures of the curvature of the Earth, and you'll be able to see the backdrop of space against it, so that's pretty cool. And I hear rumors that, Jack, you're going to be there along with some TIVA folks.
Yes. Yes, we hope to have some of the TIVA folks there. I want to go back to that that space launch that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With the balloon, you're saying they've actually lost them at sea?
They've had issues before where that's a possibility. Depending on how high the winds are aloft, if they launch out of Raleigh, you can actually carry it all the way out to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on where the jet stream is that particular day.
I watched that one go up at the Raleigh Fairgrounds, and it ended up coming down very close to the military preserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was right there close to Fort Bragg.
A nail biter there. It was going to go down right in the restricted zone.
And be blown up.
The first one they did from Maker Faire in Raleigh was really interesting because they had a camera set up to take photos like every 5 seconds or something, sort of like a time delay. And when it came down, it actually landed in a cow pasture, and so it landed facing up with the camera, so it could still take pictures facing up. And so the last several shots on the roll, so to speak, was a cow coming up to investigate what's this thing that's come down in my pasture. So it was sort of like, you know, landing on an alien planet and here's the alien coming to inspect your probe, you know.
Eat more chicken.
So I thought, so maybe we'll get some other interesting things out of eastern North Carolina when this balloon lands.
Well, you know, given the way the front and the low is going to be shaped, who knows where this thing might go. It might go south. So there's some interesting, you know, some interesting things. It might go to the alien land of Raleigh or maybe even South Carolina. Who knows? Some oceanfront property there or something. It'd be kind of cool.
So going to have any Tesla coils on display?
Well, actually, we will have at least three. We have Jim Brandley, who's a member of the Elements Makers Guild, the group that are putting this event together along with me.
The host, yes.
He has built a 4-foot-tall Tesla coil. He and his son watched the movie The Prestige a few years ago, and his son said, can we build a Tesla coil? So he said, well, let me get on the internet and let's see if we can.
Oh, my.
And he built one. His can do about 3 foot sparks under ideal conditions. And we're going to have that there at the mall. His is an analog coil, so it's just a spark gap oscillator. We also have a small coil that was built by a 14-year-old as a science fair project. their family is a member of our LMS Makers Guild, and they came to several of our meetings to kind of get some advice on how to do things. One of the things that they had a problem with is for their spark gap, they were using just some bent staples, which is, you know, just plated, chrome-plated metal. And so they were wearing out really fast. So we pointed them to Lowe's to buy some lamp finials that are round, so that they'd have a round, smooth edge so that their gap wouldn't get dirty. And basically, it's a DC-powered coil. What they did is they used the insides out of one of those electric bug zappers that just uses a diode capacitor voltage tripler to up the voltage, and then they use that to run a spark gap that then feeds the coil itself, so you get the Tesla coil to build that up. So we just kind of gave them a few pieces of advice on how to improve a few pieces of it. And we had that at Fourth Friday here in Burlington. And so, you know, as children would come up, the strange man at the booth would say, please touch this electrical thing and see what happens. And so that's always good safety. So we'll have that too. And then we have a really exciting third coil. We exhibited at Third Thursday in Greensboro to try to drum up interest in our maker fair.
Mm-hmm.
We met a man, Robert Beck, and this was a really interesting story. He came up because his girlfriend, London, said, well, you know, you talk to those guys because I think that's a Tesla coil, because we had the little coil I just talked about sitting in our booth. And he came up and he said, oh, I'm a coiler. I build coils. And then he emailed me a picture. A coiler. The folks that make Tesla coils are coilers.
Oh, wow.
So he sent me a picture of his garage, and not only did he have 2 4-foot coils, but he's got 2 bigger 6-foot ones he's working on.
Wow.
He's got a full Faraday cage DJ booth.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to talk to him because we wanted to work out safety plans and everything.
Yeah.
Turns out he's working on a Farnsworth fuser, Philo T. Farnsworth being the inventor of the modern electric television, cathode ray tube style television, electronic television. And in the 60s and 70s, Farnsworth was working on a vacuum tube fusion device that would strip ions using a vacuum tube, and they were able to get some neutron emissions. And so Robert, not only does he have the Tesla coils, but he's working on a Farnsworth fuser. He's also working on an electrolysis cell that will fit in the back of his Camaro so he can power his Camaro off water. It'll split the water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then burn the hydrogen in his carbureted car. So, you know, I'm like, wow. This, and he's got some space in his garage, too, where other friends, you know, borrow space for other projects. So, you know, the full little micro maker space there in Greensboro. So
yeah.
His coils are actually digital. So, like, if you've ever seen Architect, who have been on TV before, and they're at the Maker Faire in California, they basically play music through the plasma arc of the coil, so the coil's tuned and can emit different frequency sound from the plasma depending on what you're feeding it.
Oh my.
So what we're going to do is we're going to have, instead of just performing like Architect, what we're going to do, we'll have a keyboard set up, and kids can come up, or adults too, and play on the keyboard and then see and hear their music on a 1-foot-wide plasma arc from the Tesla coil setup. So. Oh. Very interactive.
And you also mentioned something that looked like it came out of Back to the Future, some type of helmet that you can wear. It has all types of wiring to it, like people with sleep apnea have to wear a net like this connected to a Tesla coil.
Right. We have, not for the Tesla coil. No. If anybody tries to wire you to a Tesla coil at the event, you might want to yell for an adult.
Okay.
But essentially, we have an exhibit coming that, and I don't fully understand it. I'm waiting to see it be set up and see it in operation. But it's from a professor at UNCG in Greensboro, and it's sort of an experimental art piece, but it's also a neuroscience piece. So essentially it's sort of like my understanding is that it's a set of lights that form a sort of an artistic display, but you control the pattern of the lights with your own thought patterns. So they're able to detect synapses in your brain firing in some way or some sort of other biofeedback mechanism, and then so that adjusts the lighting levels. And so, yeah, again, not connected to the Tesla coil, so careful there, but but it should be interesting.
Yeah, well, I'll probably get on it and they'll go, I think a fuse is blown. No lights are coming on at all here. Let's get this little child.
It's not invasive, is it? It's just...
No, not invasive. I think it's just a hat you put on. So as long as you like wearing hats, you know, this should be fun for you.
I hate it when they put a wire in your brain.
So, yeah, the thrill, it's...
Well, almost 80% of the people coming into the fair will probably exit the fair, so,
good.
You know.
Those are good odds, yes. Now, we were talking about some of the other things. Of course, the Triad Electric Vehicle Association will be there with Eco-Marathon vehicles and Electrathon vehicles and a new thing called the STEM Cycle, science, technology, education, math, and then there'll be some conversions and... God knows what will show up because Tiva does that. They're like herding cats. You just all of a sudden see things show up.
A flashy mob.
Yeah, a flashy mob. So we'll even get Chris Carter and some of his crazy vehicles there too during that. I know he has other things.
Well, we've got space reserved outside, and we've got a little bit of space inside for that as well.
That's great.
And I know you're bringing Dudley High School and their EV Challenge vehicle too.
Yes, the. Let's see, what was it? Oh, and you yourself are working on something that you mentioned, the EV Challenge, which is coming up the first weekend in April.
Okay.
So things seem to be going really well there, but you're doing a special project with the EV Challenge. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I am. The EV Challenge, of course, is a high school program that sort of replaces traditional auto mechanics, and so kids convert gasoline cars that they have been given or otherwise appropriate. So make sure to lock your cars at our event when you're parking our parking lot. But they convert them into electric vehicles, and of course it's really interesting because they have to make a lot of design choices, the size of the battery, the kind of motor, what they do for weight reduction, wind resistance, all kinds of things. This is all done within a set of parameters that are judged both for safety and for technical reasons, and then at the end of the, in April usually, not the end of the year, but in April, they come together in Gettysburg, North Carolina, for an event where they do written challenges, they take tests, they do verbal presentations, and they have a race, and there's several different tenets to the event, and one of those is troubleshooting. So the idea of, okay, here's our circuit or here's our system, it's not functioning properly, how do we decide what's wrong with it? And up until now, what they've done, NC State had designed a really nice troubleshooting board. It was, I don't know, about 3 feet by 3 feet, and it used golf cart parts, so contactors and controllers, and had a lead acid battery inside, and basically it simulates an electric vehicle circuit, and they would generally inject two errors. The errors could be a blown fuse or a faulty component. It could be bad wiring, you know, and the kids would be given a multimeter and told troubleshoot the circuit. And so they contacted me. I have a company called Harris Educational. I make science kits that are used in schools and by hobbyists, and I run maker fairs and I do other interesting things. But they contacted me to help design a smaller, portable, less expensive version. I'm sure there's at least $4,000 of parts on the simulator they have now, and so the side effect of that is each of the individual schools in the EV Challenge don't have access to it throughout the year in order to do any kind of training or instruction. I mean, they can do instruction, but then what they do doesn't match the simulator that they get in the exercise, and so that was one of the areas that there were a lot of problems with. I saw kids doing things like trying to do continuity testing with power turned on. Or, you know, just sort of randomly poking around at components to see if they could find some. They weren't looking, you know, at this as a simple loop circuit. So let's start at the beginning. Let's go to the middle. Let's see if we have a voltage there. If we do, we know the first half is okay. Let's try the second half and cut it, you know, split half troubleshooting or looking for voltages and things like that. And so what I've done is I've come up with using some automotive parts like relays and fuses and some other just sort of standard, less expensive electronic parts, created a new troubleshooting simulator that fits into a small plastic blow mold case. And we're still finishing things out. We don't have a final price yet, but our goal is something around $250 so the schools can afford to get one. And I understand they're working on some grants so that they can provide them to the schools through the EV Challenge anyway. But essentially, it works in a couple of different ways. I have some switches on the board that are hidden under a panel, and you can inject 5 open connections throughout the circuit with the switches. You can also have faulty components, so the relays, fuses, and certain other components plug in and can be removed, so you can have a faulty physical component. Mm-hmm. And it's also possible, because you connect some of it together with some wiring, you can also have faulty wiring. So there's several hundred different possible bad conditions that you can inject.
Wow.
And that's with the electrical side. I've also included a breadboard. A couple of the students in the program designed a controller circuit based on some stuff by Forrest Mims, but they went to great trouble to make sure their design was sort of unique. It used a MOSFET, a 555 timer, and some high-speed switching diodes. And so with the breadboard, you can go a level further and teach electronics and talk about how the controller works. I mean, in the real world, if your controller is bad, you send it off and they refit it, or they send you a new one and you put it in. It's sort of a black box. It's sealed up. But in reality, you know, the kids in this program might go on to be electrical engineers who design the controllers. So why not add in the ability to do electronic troubleshooting as well as electrical troubleshooting?
Wow, we certainly need that.
Yeah, we're talking with
And I'm hoping that it'll have
We're talking with Ben Harris of the Maker Faire that's going to be in Burlington this Saturday. And what's the times for that, Ben?
It's going to start at 10 a.m. and run till 6 p.m.
Oh, wow.
And a few of the exhibits may stick around past 6 o'clock, but essentially the majority of folks will be leaving at 6.
And this is at the Holly Hill Mall?
Yes, Holly Hill Mall and Business Center here in Burlington.
So, you know, please, if you've got people that are young in brain and heart, this is a Maker Faire is our tribe. It's where people go that can make all manner of really interesting things. We've talked briefly about Tesla coils and cars and all manner of testing equipment. And there'll be even more stuff. Steampunk is one of our favorite things to see there. And, of course, that balloon launch. We'll be back with you, Ben, in just a minute.
We hope
we're going to be dealing with some of our underwriters here for just a minute. We'll be right back with Ben Harris, Maker Faire.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to
The Home Power Hour
with Solar Jim
and Sustainable Jack. The Home Power Hour is underwritten by Box Turtle Bakery. Box Turtle Bakery. They make fresh food, and it's available at
the Carborough Farmer's Market.
At the Farmer's Market, yeah. Also,
Belladoma,
yes.
Renovations and new construction.
Oh, yeah. We're so happy to have them as underwriters here at WCOM, your community radio station. All right, we're getting back to the Maker Faire in Burlington. We're so excited. They had one in Raleigh that was very, very well attended. This is the second Maker Faire, correct?
It's North Carolina's second Maker Faire. We had, and it's also our second year here in Burlington.
Yeah.
We started last year to see, hey, can we do a Maker Faire? That's what we made, is a Maker Faire. And so this year we're going at it a little more professionally, a lot more sponsorship, a lot more exhibits, and a lot more folks. We had about 1,500 people that came last year.
Oh, great!
And we're hoping to at least double that this year. So, hopefully, your listeners can come on out. And one thing that one thing about Maker Faire is we're not just electronics and robots and technical things and stuff that could kill you, but we're also stuff for everybody in the family. We have a lady that does crochet work from recycled materials, so it's called Plarning. And so they make plastic yarn out of grocery bags, and she's actually just started to do things out of VHS videotapes.
Oh, wow.
So, and in fact, if you come to the fair and have a couple of old tapes lying around you want to get rid of, don't throw them away. Bring them into her, and she will turn them into usable items, bags, hammocks, toys for cats and dogs, all kinds of things.
Wow.
We also will have some jewelry making. We have some. We have a sort of a little bit of a theater influence here in the area. We've got a group called Studio One that has a theater production company at the Burlington Outlet Village. They do productions. They do workshops with kids. They do all kinds of things. They're going to be doing some makeup demonstrations. So if you'd like to get some fake scarring or simulate some horrible injury. So if you see people walking around that look horribly injured, it's probably just that they've been to Studio One.
If they're smiling.
Yeah, as long as they're smiling in a very, very, you know, that they can't stop smiling, that's not the Tesla coil's lingering effect on their neurons at all. No problems there.
So
But we'll have some folks that do costume design, so there will be some folks dressed up in Star Wars outfits walking around. We have all kinds of things, really. Something for everybody.
And so there's going to be some robots?
Several robots. We have, Dino Segovis does Hack a Week TV, which is a weekly YouTube channel video where he take stuff and build things, anything from motorcycles to electronics, really. And he built a robot that he had at MakerFair in North Carolina in Raleigh called Photon, the video robot. And basically, he used parts off of a Roomba vacuum cleaner as the motive power. He controls it with an Arduino. He's got sensors on it that as it moves around, if it bumps into somebody, it can back up. It's got a text-to-speech module so it can speak different, you know, phrases, tell you sorry that it bumped into you, and then on top he's got, I think it's six different video cameras, old smartphones and different things. One of them has a channel that's going to stream live to Ustream, so you can watch some of the Maker Faire live on the internet. I don't know the URL yet. I'll have it on Saturday, and then you know, he'll also be recording stuff with the robots. So you'll see the robot's vantage point of the show.
Uh-huh.
We've got a couple of different FIRST Robotics teams. You know, FIRST Robotics is a middle and high school program where kids build robots based on certain specifications and with sort of a common hardware set.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be there. And then one of the groups is doing sumo robots. So with Lego controllers, you can build your own. So basically, they'll have a bunch of parts sitting there. You figure out how to build your robot and see if you can take on a competitor and take them out. So that should be interesting. We just had another FIRST Robotics team sign up this morning that I'm going to try to find space for. So, you know, and then there's also a group out of Ashboro, I believe, if memory serves. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but they do laser cut and paper robotics. So they're not mechanized, but they're robots in an art form.
Oh, wow.
So so that's kind of cool as well.
Well, hold on here. It went zip when it blew, bop when it stopped, brrr when it stood still. I never knew just what it was, and I guess I never will. Okay. we had to bring that in real quick. So we're talking about all these types of robots, et cetera. This is going to be really, really exciting. And the TV and the you know, the artsy, craftsy type people. And you also, it's such a big thrill to see the steampunk guys there. And could you tell us a little bit about what steampunk is for the uninitiated?
Steampunk is sort of a genre in literature and film and the arts generally that is sort of a speculative, retro-futuristic sci-fi. So in other words, if anybody's ever seen the TV show from the 60s, The Wild Wild West, where they sort of have modern gadgets but in a format that may have been possible with brass and steam and the technology of the 1880s, the notion is it's set in Victorian times, but folks have technology similar today, but with the materials and techniques from that time.
That is
so lots of leather, lots of brass, lots of goggles.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I know when Solar Jim came to me and said, you know, we do our TV shows, we should be dressed in steampunk. I kind of laughed at it, but it has slowly grown on me, and it's definitely grown in the interest of people around the country as far as now they kind of know when you say steampunk, they know what you're talking about. But there will be some really neat displays.
Yeah, it's definitely grown.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, another interesting little story, in some of our earliest meetings, the Alamance Makers Guild, we would meet in public places around the county. One day we were at the Starbucks by the mall, and they have a meeting room you can use, so that's what we were using. And the building used to be a bank, so the meeting room has these glass walls on the one side of it. And Stephen Chapman, who's a noted North Carolina steampunk artist, who's part of our group, kind of came for the first time to show off some of his projects. And a lot of what he brought was steampunk weaponry. You know, the steampunk gentleman has to be armed with various ray guns and other devices to detect the ether waves, and so he has things like a steampunk Gatling gun that he's made that's powered by a battery powered drill motor, so the barrel will spin around and different, you know, lots of he'll take, what he does is he takes like water pistols that he'll buy at a Goodwill store, and then he'll add things to them and file them down and change them and paint them and age them and weather them and do all these things to make really convincing looking guns for the alternate 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had all of his weaponry, you know, arrayed on the table, and it was very interesting to watch the passersby, you know, as they, with their coffee and their muffins, you know, we were expecting Homeland Security to come in and talk to us any minute then.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we always wondered what they kept in the vaults back there. Yes, it's come out to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting. So, you know, there'll be this is the Burlington Makers Fair this Saturday from 10 till 6 at the Holly Hill Mall. And is there a web address that people can go to?
Yes, it's Burlington Mini Maker Fair, all one word, and fair is spelled F-A-I-R-E.
Mm-hmm. And does it cost to get
into this? Burlington Mini Maker Fair.
.com.
No, it's an absolutely free event.
Oh.
We're open to the public. So we're doing this as a kind of a service to the community because, you know, you were mentioning STEM cycle. You know, my background is in education. I very much want to push it. And, in fact, we actually are saying STEAM, so science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. So we're adding the arts in there as well. One of the things that I've noticed in talking to people around the community about what the Alamance Makers Guild is all about, what Maker Faire is all about, is sometimes there's this notion that we are all these highly talented people, craftsmen and artists. And to me, when I hear, you know, artiste, You kind of think someone that's sort of stuck up and is going to criticize your silly little watercolor painting. And that's not what we're about. I mean, we definitely have folks that are highly accomplished. We have Nim Batchelor and Jim Barber, who are two excellent wood turners. They make amazing things. And it's you know, Nim, we call this the Nim effect. He will show you something, and then he'll say, but, you know, it's flawed, it's not perfect. And so you pull out your electron microscope, and you can actually detect a minor flaw under the electron microscope. So he's very critical of his own work. But the thing is, we also have lots of folks that come to our meetings who don't know a lot about making, or they're not necessarily experienced in art or creating things, but they want to learn. That's the whole point, is they want to get their hands dirty. They want to see, where can I start? What ideas can I get? How can I get some help to make this thing happen? Maybe they're an artist, but they're looking for some help for programming to take a microcontroller like an Arduino and motorize their art or do something. You know, they don't have one piece of the puzzle. Someone else there might.
Right.
And so it's a very open, very community kind of a thing. So, you know, our Maker Faire is not just for folks who are consider themselves to be makers. I mean, we're all makers, all human beings create things and put things together and fix things and take things apart. And really, this is a celebration of that. So, you know, very open, very welcoming to everybody, no
Homo
matter what
sapiens
your personal
maker.
Opinion is of your ability.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Homo sapiens maker. Now, this is a great place to go and be inspired. Can you tell us two things? Number one is you have a, is it a guild or a maker group, or what do you call yourselves, and when do you meet and where?
We're the Elements Makers Guild. We started about 2 years ago, and at the moment we have meetings every second Thursday of the month at the Sylvan Learning Center in Burlington. Sylvan's been very gracious to let us meet after hours. We start at 7 p.m. We usually have a pizza from Mimi's Pizza in Burlington for dinner, and I laughingly say no one really cares about making it really good, so people keep coming back. But, you know, we have guest speakers, and we actually have been talking. Holly Hill Mall is our event center, and they are very community-minded as well. They're looking to help us out with what we're trying to do as far as eventually, you know, getting more of this kind of thing going on in the community. And so we're going to start, we don't have any details yet, but we're going to start doing some weekend events as they fit into their schedule, where we will have talks about 3D printing, digital fabrication. I'm hoping to talk you into getting Tiva to come out some weekend and talk about electric vehicles. And, you know, so we'll sort of have sort of a series of TED Talks type of things here in Burlington on various topics and try to get, you know, folks involved.
Yeah, you just touched on one of my favorite things, the TED Talks that are available. And now there's a TED channel on the internet where you can start listening to these people. And, of course, there are various places where they've come up with what's called the TEDx, which is the stepchild of TED, which is all over the world with speakers. Now, another thing I wanted to bring up, because you kind of touched on it, is there are clubs and nonprofits and even some for-profit organizations that have become allied with the Maker Faire movement are like community workshops where you can come in and learn how to operate various equipment, et cetera. Can you touch on a couple of those?
Right. Well, basically they're called maker spaces, or sometimes they're called hacker spaces.
Mm-hmm.
We're very lucky to have a really good maker space in Durham, North Carolina, called Splat Space, and they're going to be one of the exhibitors at our event. They do a lot of educational outreach to the community. The real idea is, you know, CNC machines, 3D printers, excuse me, all of those devices, the prices have come down. They're still maybe out of the reach of a lot of people, but they're more affordable, so why not pool resources together, put these things, along with traditional tools, electronics labs, circular saws, what have you, into a space where folks can work together, learn from each other, and make some things happen in the community. Because I think, you know, in a way, we've become disconnected from how, where, why things are made. Mm-hmm. We just sort of go to the store and buy one. We've become a very consumer culture. And, you know, whereas our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents canned food, changed vacuum tubes, fixed their own cars, built their own houses, you know, and people, I think, have this innate need to get back to, you know, make my own thing. I don't want my bag to be exactly the one that's on the shelf and there's 500 more of them. I want to customize and make my own VHS tape bag that's unique to me. There's only one on earth. And and so learning things like that and working together as a community, there's a group in Winston-Salem called FabLocker. They do a lot of 3D printing stuff. There's the Charlotte Hackerspace. There is a group in Raleigh. You know, we had a tech shop in Raleigh, which is, as you say, it's a for-profit model. They were a giant warehouse full of every machine known to man, and they recently closed. So the people that work there are working now to establish a group called the RTP Makers, and they want to eventually launch a makerspace somewhere around Raleigh to fill that void. And in fact, they even have been talking to us about what we've been doing here in Burlington, because
ultimately,
that's my goal, is I want to open a makerspace here. We have some seed funding we're working on some other ideas for funding. We're kind of unofficially looking around at some properties now, and so that's kind of another reason for Maker Faire, is to let the community know this kind of thing is possible. You could bring your kids in and they can learn geometry because they want to 3D print something. They could learn how to solder. They can learn how to program. They can build an electric vehicle or work out how a solar cell works or just sit around and talk about crochet like the old gentleman liked to do.
Oh, that's fantastic stuff.
So what time is the balloon launch going to happen?
We're planning to have it at 11:30. It'll actually probably go up at 11:45, but we'll gather outside in the back of the mall there's a grassy hill on the rear by the Wells Fargo Bank, behind Sears, that will be where we launch from. And we're hoping for 11:30. That may change depending on the weather. We'll if you come to the Maker Faire, we'll let all the booths there know. So, and the NC Near Space booth, they'll be there all day, so you can ask them as well. But 11:30 is the plan.
Wow, this is fantastic stuff. And of course, one of the things that I want to extend to you, Ben, on behalf of Tiva and Dudley, is they finally got the date now for the Greensboro Odyssey, which will primarily be about electric vehicles, but also natural gas and other powered ethanol, et cetera, powered vehicles. And we'd like to open it up to the people with the Maker Faire to come as well and show off some of their future stuff. So October 12th, put it on your mat, on your calendar. And we'll be excited to see these things open up a little bit bigger. Last thing I want to talk to you about is, have you been, I mean, you're doing the Sylvan Learning Center. Have you also gotten any contacts with some of the schools or summer camps, et cetera, to start showing off this? I know that Angie Parrish, who is with you, has had a program, and she's going to be expanding it soon, called Go Green Alamance, which four-hour program with solar cars and solar cookers, and I could see this thing expanding to include more.
Well, and that's one of the reasons we want to get a permanent space so that we can use it for those kind of events, that we can bring people in. You know, we're I'm very much interested in education of all kinds, and Angie's been a great – she's actually the person also behind the Recycled Crochet, by the way, but she's been a great resource as far as the educational outreach. I've also been talking a little bit to the folks in the school board here about what we're doing, and hopefully they're going to be coming out to see our Maker Faire. I think once they see what we've got going, I mean, it's hard. Maker Faire is so broad, and there's so many different things, and it comes down to the aha moment when you see someone smile when someone's project comes alive, or when they see the Tesla coil making their musical notes, and just the power that has to motivate people to want to learn more. You know, you have to kind of see it in person to truly get it. You can describe it all day long, but it's just you don't get it until you've been there. And I'm really hoping that this will open their eyes and that we can do a lot to support the local schools. You know, I would love to do field trips, you know, have kids come out to see events. I would love to do things where we went to the schools to show some of this off, because I really feel that, you know, one of the things about education is we've got to support the teachers. The teachers are working really hard with more and more limited resources, and so it's up to those of us in the community. And anybody listening, no matter what you do, I mean, go call your local school, even if you don't have kids yourself, and say, hey, can I come talk to your class? Can I share what I do for my day job? Can I share my hobby with you? Can I mentor some kids or judge a science fair? You know, whatever it might be, if the community gets involved, we can get through the tough time.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people, you know, nowadays, just don't get into, they're scared of, they're going to void the warranty on something if they mess with it, but... But makers love voiding the warranty.
Well, right.
Warranty?
The motto
warranty is
screws, not glue, so that you can take it apart.
Yeah.
If you buy the device, you own it, you can change it, hack it into something else, reprogram it, redesign it, do what you will with it. And I mean, that's the thing. You know, we live in a manufactured world. We live in a very high technology world. And, you know, it pays to understand a little bit about how it all works and how it's all made. And, you know, even if you don't have the time or the space to do all those things, if nothing else, if you understand a little more about it, you won't be cheated when you have to take your car in to have it worked on or have your air conditioner serviced or whatever it might be. You know, you'll understand what's going on.
Yeah, and the over of 2,000 days that we've spent in school by the time we've graduated from high school, very few adults, graduates, et cetera, can remember, you know, the day-to-day grind stuff that we did as students, as kids. But, boy, we really remember that when that special person showed up and showed us how, you know, a little steam engine worked, or a guy from NASA came in and introduced, you know, this is liquid oxygen, and it can make things go boom, or we can make a hydrogen balloon, and it goes pop. I mean, it's amazing what really triggers you to, you know, to go further and start exploring.
Yeah.
You know, the science fairs, et cetera. you know, I always felt really sad that in the school system my kids were in, that the science fairs ended when they left middle school. We had such a good time, and my biggest gifts to them at Christmas was a little card that said, you know, this is redeemable for me to spend a little bit of money on your science fair project. And so, you know, they would come up and say, Dad, this is what I want to do, and here's, I'm cashing it in. Let's go get this part. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, back to the same thing as far as what you remember, it's also about the time parents spend with their kids actively doing something. You know, one of the things that I tell a lot of people is, haven't you ever noticed lately that all your kid does is stare at an iPad or an iPhone or an Internet or a TV? And wouldn't you like them to be getting their hands dirty making something, or instead of just absorbing the content, programming the content themselves? And you know, back to the little Tesla coil that the family did, that family was highly motivated. They bothered to take time out of their schedule to bring their two kids to our Elements Makers Guild meeting and seek out some help for their project. And in the process, their kids learned about steampunk and you know, whatever the other topics of the day may have been in those meetings. And the kids interacted with the adults. And you know, back to the EV challenge for a second. The one thing that impressed me most about the EV challenge was those high school students would look you in the eye and shake your hand. Just the fact that they were, you know, it built such self-confidence in them because they had learned these skills. They were a part of this high technology that they were told, you can do this too. And they understood that, and they would shake your hand and look you in the eye. That's a big deal.
It is, and I remember from that same event that you looking a little bit stumped with two high school students sitting there with a little bit of a chip that they'd been working on and explaining how that worked, and you were going, how'd you guys do that again? It was great, you know. They were in charge. They knew their stuff.
Very impressive.
It's so much fun to, and you know, they're sitting there relating to you over an idea, not over age or gender or anything else. It's, you know, hey, this is such a cool idea, and what do you think about it? And all those other barriers just drop when you get into conversations like that. Really, really exciting. We're talking with Ben Harris, who is the coordinator for the Burlington Mini Maker Fair, which is going to be this Saturday, and it's not that small. It's grown. There'll be a near space launch. There'll be vehicles being built there and taken apart, Eco Marathon, Electrathon, EV Challenge, and then steampunk stuff and things,
robots. 10 a.m. to 6
Black
p.m.
Fishing.
And we just kind of glossed over one of the most fascinating things, which are the 3D printers. You seem to have just an inordinate amount of 3D printers at these events, and they're so cool in what they do. What is 3D printing? What's its future?
3D printing is basically, if you think of like a cake decorator, if you could put that cake decorator that squeezes out the icing on an arm that was controlled by a computer so that you could feed in a numerical plan and it would follow that program, you can build up an object layer by layer. So it does it out of plastic like PLA, or if you can do it out of recyclable materials and other materials. So you can build up objects, you know, instead of molding them or instead of subtractively manufacturing by, like, away from a block where you have a lot of waste, you can build them up step by step. And the cool thing about it is that it sort of frees you from the tyranny of craftsmanship. If you can design it and get the 3D model, which you can share with other people, you can make one or you can make a million, and you don't have to have a steady hand or 30 years' experience in using the tools. You can just hit print, and now you've got an object.
The tyranny of
craftsmanship.
The tyranny of craftsmanship. Trademark Ben Harris as of this day. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Ben, thank you for our time is up, but thank you so much, and we'll see you at the Mini Maker Fair Saturday, the 17th,
Huffman Mill Road, Burlington,
at Holly Hill Mall. Yeah. From 10 to 6.
Looking
is that
forward
correct?
To it.
We'll see you there.
From 10 to 6.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thanks again. This is great.